Hey True North, it's Friday, October 23rd. My name's Eugene. Welcome to another episode of Roundtable. I'm here with Pastor Jay. Also, we have a very special guest, Brett McCracken, who is not a member of our church, our first like kind of outside church guest, but someone that's a really close friend to myself and even Pastor Jay. He's preached for us, I think, a couple times before. We've even had him on the podcast. And if you don't know about him, he's an elder slash, I should say pastor too, right, Brett, at Southland Church?
Yeah, I mean, elder, but at our church, they're the one and the same. So yeah,
okay.
Pastor, elder.
Yeah. Biblically, the right thing. So elder, pastor of Southland Church, author of several books, the senior editor at the Gospel Coalition. But Brett, thanks again for coming on, taking some time to be with us.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Yeah. Fun. So we kind of wanted to center the discussion kind of a little bit based off of your upcoming book, which I think is releasing in February, called The Wisdom Pyramid. I know I got a little bit of glimpses before just talking to you in our friendship, but maybe if you could give like a quick, I don't know, a couple minute summary of that book, of what, why you wrote it and what you're trying to attain from that book.
Yeah, so basically a couple years ago, I was asked to speak at a conference, a Humble Beast conference actually up in Portland, on the topic of how to find wisdom in a fake news kind of post-truth world. Like, how do we do that? And so I gave this 10-minute talk, but I thought it would be helpful to create like a visual aid to have on screen that I kind of unpacked. So I came up with this idea of the wisdom pyramid, which was inspired by the food pyramid, which you might remember from, you know, elementary school. They teach you how to have a balanced diet of food with this image of the wisdom of the food pyramid. I thought, like, maybe we could apply that idea of like a balanced diet that's conducive to our health in terms of sections of knowledge or kind of categories of knowledge, just like there were food groups. Some of them are more important than others. So I came up with the wisdom pyramid. And anyway, it kind of really resonated with people at this conference, and it went kind of viral on social media, the image of the wisdom pyramid, even though the least important part of the wisdom pyramid, the top kind of the dessert category of the food pyramid was at the top, right? The fats, oils, and sweets category. In the wisdom pyramid, I put social media and the internet at the top. So basically, that's kind of the argument of the book, is we're in this kind of sickness in our culture, this spiritual kind of mental sickness in so many ways, in part because our habits are reversed. Like, we have it upside down. We're building our knowledge diet around the wrong things. So most of us kind of are picking up our phone first thing in the morning when we wake up. We're scrolling through our feeds, you know, every day, all day, every day. When we're waiting in line to get coffee, when we're sitting at the stoplight, you know, for 15 seconds, what do? We fill those 15 seconds with swiping through this app and, you know, this social media. And it's not making us wise. It's the opposite. It's making fools of us, literally, as individuals, as a society, as Christians. And I think the kind of one sentence summary of what I'm getting at in the book is we have more and more information than ever before in the digital age, but less and less wisdom. Mm-hmm. And so the solution is not more information, it's more wisdom. So how do we do that? How do we find more wisdom? And that's what the book is proposing, this plan, this kind of diet for cultivating more wisdom in your life.
Hey, that sounds great, Brett. I'm really looking forward to reading your book. I think it's really very applicable to us in our kind of postmodern, post-truth world, like you said. One of the questions that I have is, as we continue to be kind of bombarded with like constant news feed and information, what are some of the practical application, or practical ways to kind of divide up those things? So kind of like, how do you make sure you're getting the good food group, I guess, in your diet?
One of the big things that I talk about and I've been thinking about a lot recently is when we go online or when we open our devices, so often we don't go with any intention, really. We just go to kind of haphazardly, you know, float from thing to thing. Like, we go, really, we go where the algorithms take us. So we're in this very passive, vulnerable place where we're literally, like, we open up our phone. We don't know what we're going to do with, you know, we don't know where it's going to take us. We're surfing the net. That was the initial metaphor for the internet. And in the early days of the internet, it sounded great, right? Like, oh, we're going to surf the internet. That sounds fun. But actually, that's the worst thing for our society, when everyone is just kind of riding the waves of the internet wherever they're going to take you. And it, oftentimes it takes you into these vortexes and these rabbit holes that ultimately just lead to trivial things. So one of the big, like, themes that I talk about in the book is the need for intention. When we go online, when we go on our phones, go for a purpose and stay only as long as you need to for that purpose. So if you need to Google something, great, like, Google it. And as soon as you find the answer, like, sign off.
Like, don't, if go you, out down those rabbit holes, is what you're saying?
Right. You don't want to just, like, go onto Google for one reason and then, you know, an hour later you're, like, doing something that you never thought you were going to do and you don't know how you got there. I mean, yeah, that's where so much bad stuff happens in our internet habits, honestly, is when we get sucked into these things that it's really how the social media companies want it to work, right? They're designing the algorithms to do this, to kind of manipulate our attention and to commandeer our attention in such a way that we can spend hours on their platform without even knowing why or what we're doing or what the purpose is. And I do this, right? I think you guys probably have experienced this in your own lives too. It's hard to resist it. So that's one theme, Jay. Sorry if that's kind of not answering the question super directly, but I think intention versus passivity is a key principle here. Because if we're passive in the digital age, we are just going to set ourselves up for a lot of trouble.
Yeah. I don't know if you watched the doc. It's like a half documentary on Netflix called Social. Yeah. What is it? Social
Dilemma.
Social Dilemma.
Yeah, for sure. But as you're mentioning algorithms, there's a guy that they interview. He's a French guy who used to work at YouTube. He's the one that kind of created the AI for the next recommended video.
Right. Watch this next.
Watch this next. Yeah. And he kind of talks about that. And I know I listened to a podcast a while back where he was one of the guys that was interviewed in it. And they're talking about just how these algorithms basically keep us in our little echo chambers. Right. And for sure. Yeah. I mean, I don't know if this is like a, you know, I feel like this idea is biblical. You know, I'm sure it's somewhere written in Proverbs, but, you know, like, the wise man listens to the advice of others, whereas the fool only listens to himself. And I think if we're just passively just inside social media and the internet,
right,
we're just basically listening to our own thoughts, right? As these algorithms are designed in a way so effectively to just kind of keep us in our own echo chambers. And I see that a lot in myself, and I see that a lot in some of my friends online as well.
Yeah, I think you're hitting at one of the three big themes I talk about in the first three chapters of the book. So I basically define the problem in the first half of the book, and I go through three big problems that I see in the digital age as it relates to information. Chapter one is too much information. There's just way too much. It turns out to be unhelpful, the amount of information we have access to. And then the second problem is it's too fast. So the speed of information is a recipe for disaster for so many reasons. And then the third one, which gets to what you're saying, Jay, is that it's too focused on the individual. The orientation of information is, it's all oriented towards you as the consumer. It's tailored to you and your pre-existing bias, your pre-existing kind of inclinations. And over time, the algorithms perfect it even more. And so it's this compounding problem in that way. And we're seeing it. We're seeing the results of it in our culture, where it's no wonder that we're increasingly unable to understand one another, to even be aware of the existence of other ideas. You know, we're in such tight bubbles of our own algorithmic making that we don't understand how others could think differently, because we're seeing a version of the world that literally is different than someone else is seeing it by virtue of the media that is feeding that reality to them. So it's a problem, and you know, it's not something that technology and iPhones like invented. I think mm-hmm. that this problematic orientation around the self as the standard and kind of the center of wisdom, that's been a problem, you know, since the Garden of Eden, right? Going all the way back to Adam and Eve, who did what was right in their own eyes, you know, against yeah. the commandments of God. Like, so this is always the path to folly for humans, is when we kind of rely on our own wisdom. It's a theme you find throughout Proverbs, this idea that, you know, trust not in your own understanding, but in all your ways acknowledge God. Like, do not be wise in your own sight, you know, but acknowledge God and he will direct your path. So that's a big theme of my book, is just this, the problematic orientation around us as individuals, and technology is making it worse. It didn't invent it, but it's making it worse. And so it's becoming, you know, easier and easier to just kind of retreat into your own self for truth and for, you know, reality. And that's yeah. a recipe for a lot of bad things.
I always picture like Professor X when he puts on the, you know, Cerebrum kind of, I don't know if you guys are mutant or what is it,
yeah,
comic
yeah.
fans, but then his power gets like intensified. And I feel like in terms of the internet and the media that we're in, we get into social media and the internet and our depravity mm. intensifies, you know, like it's kind of like that yeah. magnifying glass into the depths of our sinfulness. And it's pretty scary. Yeah. If you think about it.
Yeah. It definitely is an intensifier, like of, yeah. of everything, right? It just makes everything more intense.
I don't know if you touch this in your book or not, but I do feel, because it seems like it's unhealthy, which we, you know, I think you laid out perfectly. But I also, in my own experience, these temptations and habits into the digital, you know, vortex or digital mm-hmm. reality also leads you to direct sin, right? Like many times I'm on Instagram and, you know, I'm just in the vortex and of like sports, of like mm-hmm. football, and the algorithm knows that. And then it also knows if it's a man watching that. I've seen like, oh, you'll see photos of like girls in swimsuits,
yeah,
like whatever it may be, which, you know, can cause yep. you to stumble that way. Or even worse, like on Instagram, you know, one thing I hate about Instagram is it's so good because mm-hmm. the sponsored ads mm-hmm. in the beginning, I was like, these are all whack. Like, I don't want to shake weight. Like, I don't care about that. But it got mm-hmm. so good where I've bought products on the yeah. click.
Yeah.
Without thinking, and I'm like, I think that could be sinful. That could be gluttony or greed in a sense that you're mm-hmm. not even thinking, and you're just, oh, this mm-hmm. looks like a good golf product or a good jersey. I'm just going to swipe and buy. So mm-hmm. maybe can you speak into how you feel like not only is it unhealthy, but can it lead to sin? Well, I mean, I think yeah. we know the answer is yes, but how, in your opinion, too, do these unhealthy ways of wisdom also yeah. lead to direct sin?
In the book, I have this section where I talk about the theme in the book of Proverbs of these two women, the woman of wisdom and the woman of folly, right? Mm-hmm. There's these two kind of symbolic women. Lady Folly is often like depicted as kind of a woman sitting on, you know, the front step of a house. And when we're walking on the path, you know, she's calling out to you. She's calling out, like enticing you, like, come off the path of wisdom, like stray off of the path that you're on and come over to me, and all, you know, it's temptation. It's a siren song. That's how folly is described. Yeah. And I compare Lady Folly to algorithms. Like, I think social media algorithms are the Lady Folly of our day, because, you know, if wisdom is about staying on a path, and if it's about intention, like to go back to what I said earlier, if we need to have intention, we need to know where we're going, then, you know, Lady Folly is the algorithm that's constantly trying to grab us away. Like, come on, you know you want to watch this. Like, watch this yeah. next. You know, read this. Click on this. And the foolish man is the one who gets easily, you know, tempted off the path, and who's called, who listens to that siren song of Lady Folly that the algorithms, you know, are calling us to. Yeah. And it's scary how much the algorithms do understand our weak spots and our temptations. It's almost like the devil works that way too, right? Like, yeah. the devil goes after people in their weak areas. He doesn't go after everyone in the same way. He goes after this person because he knows that this is going to do it for them. This is going to, like, grab their eyeballs, grab their attention. And algorithms work the same way. they're perfected over time to know, you know, oh, that person like looked at that photo on Instagram for a little longer than he normally looks at other photos. So therefore, you know, we know exactly what to get him with in terms of images and advertisements. You know, it's insane how much they track. You know, Netflix has even they've revealed the extent to which they track people, and it's granular, right? It's down to like, you know, when do people press pause in movies and TV shows? Like, where do they rewind to rewatch things? Whoa. And so all of that is so frightening, right? Because it exposes our sinful weak spots. Yeah. And someone has that data, someone has that on file, and it's going to come back in the form of an advertisement, in the form of a Lady Folly, you know, calling us off of the path. Sure. And so I think it's, and again, we're not passive, right? We don't have to have a passive posture. So it's not like we're destined or fated to just, you know, be manipulated in that way. But it's a powerful thing to be up against, honestly. It's a powerful thing to resist when there's a temptation that's like so perfectly fine-tuned in the way the algorithms can work.
You know, and Brett, you know, like in during this, you know, I just finished watching part of the debate earlier, you know, and so we're in a very kind of politically driven and divisive era right now. And and I don't know what other people do, but so I feel like what I try to do to escape that is spend more time in entertainment streaming or, you know, whether it's Netflix shows or documentaries or movies. What are some guidelines that we can kind of look at in terms of how can we wisely enjoy entertainment and the arts and the movies in a way that's not going to also pigeonhole us into a different type of mind numbness?
Yeah, I mean, I think, again, I would caution against passivity. So, you know, so much of the Netflix way is just like turning it on and just kind of seeing what's there and like seeing what they're recommending and not really having a plan. So, and I do this too. Like sometimes I'm just fried at the end of a day and I just turn on Netflix and I'm not sure what I'm going to watch, but we'll see what the algorithm wants me to watch. That's not a healthy way to consume media. I think that it's good to go with a plan to be educated. So I often recommend like it's like find some humans, not AI, not algorithms. Find some trusted humans whose opinions you really trust and listen to them. Like, so, you know, what are the people who you trust saying is good on Netflix? You know, what are the people that are in your church who you know to be wise and to be discerning in their media? Like, what documentary do they say, you know, you should watch? So, yeah, I mean, it's not really, you know, rocket science, but humans should be where we go for advice more than the algorithms. And so that's part of why I love doing what I do at the Gospel Coalition, which is in part, you know, trying to curate things and to point people to the worthwhile movies and worthwhile documentaries and various other things in media, because it is such an overwhelming world, right? There's so much. Yeah. I just get dizzy when I open Amazon Prime Video or Netflix or Disney Plus or any of those things. It's just insane, like how many things are at our fingertips. So we're going to go crazy if we don't have curators that we trust and people who can guide us a little bit in this world of too much media and too much information.
No, like Eugene is one of the guys that I ask about shows to watch. You know, I have a couple other friends, and you know, every time they give me a recommendation, it's always good. And when it's the algorithm, it's like, dude, Netflix, I do not want to watch this Adam Sandler Halloween movie. Like, stop, stop trying to shove that down my throat, and I'm going to watch something of substance. You know, right. And so it totally makes sense.
So this is a kind of a little bit different topic, but semi-related. And I think it goes up your alley because there's a book that Brett wrote called Gray Matters, which I think most millennials should read. And the reason I bring that up is I think, you know, because Game of Thrones died down, the popularity of it, this debate has kind of quieted in the church. But
Oh, the Game of Thrones debate.
Yeah, you know, and I think what the Game of Thrones debate kind of at its core was is what is too sinful? What is too inhumane? What is too profane to watch as a Christian? And I want to specifically ask, you know, I'll be honest. Like, and I think I've mentioned this to you before, too, Brett. Like, I highly dislike Christian content and movies because I don't see a lot of good quality, quote unquote, just purely Christian movies out there. Not there's none, but I enjoy good cultured entertainment. And as someone with a, and if people don't know, with a college education in cinematic arts and as the senior editor of the Gospel Coalition, how would you advise, and I think, you know, especially millennial, but, you know, younger and older Christians that, that watch entertainment that can be questionable, that maybe has a lot of sexual content, maybe has too much violence, maybe has too much language or whatever it may be. Where is the line? Is there a line? And what's the kind of principles you could give to our church and to those listening?
Yeah, that's a really good question to ask, and I think it's important that we're asking it. And so I, as much as the Game of Thrones is kind of a little bit tired as like the jumping off point for this debate, I think the debate that it, that is being raised is important, because, you know, ultimately media is powerful. It shapes us, and it's I think that we would be naive to suggest otherwise. Like, what we watch, what we listen to, what we consume in media, for better or for worse, is shaping us. It's shaping our hearts, our minds. And so that makes it immediately a relevant issue for Christians, because being a Christian is about being formed in Christlikeness, right? We're all about spiritual formation. And are we collectively as Christians becoming more like Jesus? Well, formation is always happening in life. Everyone is always being formed, even if you're not religious. And media is a big place where that formation happens. So I see a lot of Christians, sadly, who are being formed more powerfully by the kind of media that they're surrounding themselves with, in ways that, you know, are actually moving them backward or away from Christlikeness. So that's just a preliminary comment, I think, to say that it's an important question. Now, in the specific question of, like, what's the line of, like, too inappropriate or whatever, that's a tough one, because I think it's, there's a lot of context that plays into that, both for, you know, who we are as individuals and our unique kind of temptations and proclivities. To go back to that, algorithms, you know, prey on our weakness areas. Some people, you know, have issues with, you know, they're triggered, or they're like, their issue is violence, right? Or like, you know, gore or horror, things like that. Other people, you know, a lot of men in particular, like sex and nudity is, if we're honest, is like a, is a real thing that is a thing of concern when it comes to media content. Even things like language, like, it's, I think for a lot of us millennials, like, we kind of shrug that off, like, you know, oh, like, we've grown up in a world where we've heard the F word, like, hundreds of times a day if we're watching movies, like, so that's not a big deal. But I think that is still an issue that we need to, like, be mindful of, like, and I, as a dad now with kids, like, I think about the fact that, like, still as a society, we shield our children from those words, right? We don't want them, we like do this to them when there's a movie on and there's like language, we still shield them. So why do we do that? Why, if it's totally okay and there's nothing, if it's totally a neutral thing, those words, then why are we still trying to protect children from it? Anyway, that's a tangent for another day, but yeah, I'm just saying that there's different issues, different people wrestle with different things. I think that working it through in community is an important thing. That's one of the things I touch on in Gray Matters. Even if it does have to do with individual kind of weakness areas and kind of what each individual struggles with, you can't just kind of make the decision for yourself like that. It's okay for me to watch Game of Thrones, and, you know, that's just, I'm just making that pronouncement as an individual. Yeah. Like, I think as Christians, like, these are significant enough decisions with significant enough stakes for our formation that we really should invite others into it. And if you're part of a church community and, like, you know, 8 out of 9 people in your small group are kind of like, I don't think you should be watching Game of Thrones, like, for all these reasons, and you're the only one saying, no, it's totally okay, like, I can watch it, I promise, it's not a big deal for me to watch, you know, nudity and sex and whatever, like, that's probably, you should probably pay attention to that, like,
sure,
you know, we're not always the best judges of of those things, and we can deceive ourselves, and self-deception is a real thing when it comes to sin and issues that we maybe, you know, deep down know are wrong, but we've convinced ourselves through all these sophisticated arguments that it's okay.
Yeah.
So, I mean, this is an area, honestly, where I've become a lot more conservative over the years. I would say in my early 20s, when I was in college, as someone who grew up in the evangelical church, a little bit restrictive when it came to media, I think I went through this phase in my 20s where I was like swinging the other extreme, right? Where I was like, everything's okay, and I'm going to watch, like, you know, totally like TVMA, whatever, that's fine, like HBO, you know, David Lynch movies, whatever. Like, and I look back on my 22-year-old self and I'm just like shaking my head, like, that was just really foolish. Like, I tried to, like, justify it in the name of art and in the name of, like, cultural engagement, you know, which is a buzzword for a lot of young Christians, but at the end of the day, like, you can't justify some things in the name of cultural engagement. You just can't. Things like the movie Cuties, which was a movie that was kind of a flashpoint this summer on Netflix. That's a movie where I'm just like, I see some of my Christian friends who are like film critics who are Christians making defenses of it and saying like, no, she's an artist. She's a French, you know, woman of color. We need to listen to her perspective and her voice. And I'm like, it's child pornography, and that's just what it is. And, you know, we can't, that's just self-deception right there when we're trying to, we become so morally blind, I think, on some issues that we can't even see an obviously problematic thing. So,
yeah.
Anyway, that could be a whole podcast right there talking about Cuties, yeah. But
kind of related, and this is more or less serious. And I guess, Jay, I want your opinion too. Like, so I think in response to that, like, some to the extreme side of the church, there are Christian filmmakers that try and make Christian movies.
Yes, often Fireproof, very bad. Mm-hmm.
And like, not just Christian movies, but like Christian music. I think if I'm going to be completely honest, like, why do you think it's, if I can say it subjectively as a, you know, connoisseur of a lot of entertainment, why is it so bad? Like, why is it so boring? Why doesn't it hit? Like, I understand, like, yeah, we should try and be pure, but like, not like this. Like, this is the alternative. I'll become a monk and I won't watch anything, you know?
And I don't think you don't need to, like, caveat it by saying it's subjective. I think it's objectively bad. Like,
thank you, Brett. I needed you to say that to,
it's objectively
to bolster
bad.
My confidence.
Yeah, I think that it's sad. It's one of the things that I lament the most, that, you know, as bad as Hollywood is in terms of pushing the envelope, and like, I wish Christians could offer compelling alternatives that are artistic and, you know, engaging, but not, you know, showing child pornography. You know, it should be easy to clear that low bar of, like, make compelling entertainment that is not a moral abomination. But but instead, most Christian movies are like just like PowerPoint presentations of why atheism is bad, you know. That's pretty much all God's Not Dead is.
Yeah, how can you make a sequel to that? That still boggles my mind, you know?
Right, God's still not dead.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, I mean, go ahead, Jay.
I think it's not that there aren't talented Christian artists, you know, or talented Christian actors or or talented Christian musicians. I think, and I mean, I don't know how valid this point is, but I feel like there has been such a deep-rooted error in thinking within the evangelical Christian church where people believe that nothing good or nothing entertaining can come from a culture that doesn't know God, right? Yeah. But the reality is we see that God even uses, you know, I think Kevin DeYoung made this point, but God uses Cain's offsprings to father the harp and the lyre, you know, or the lyre. And those are the musical instruments that later on are commanded to be used for the praise of God and worship. So these you know, the sons of Cain who do not know God were able to create art and music that ends up becoming used for God's glory. And so I feel like the evangelical Christian artists or the producers of these movies, they're trying so hard to distinguish themselves from what I guess is called profane or secular entertainment that they've just gone completely the other way, and they're trying to create like an hour and a half, you know, movie sermon, you know. But I feel like if Christians are able to, you know, as Brett says, intentionally and also just very deep within their own giftedness and talents, I feel that, you know, we have the potential to make something good, you know, and
for sure.
And I'm not too versed in it, but I know Eugene, you've listened to some Christian artists and bands that you kind of like, right? So it's possible.
There is a lot of really quality Christian music being made. I would say we're better off in the music genre than we are with movies right now.
Agreed.
In terms of quality, and more and more with every year that passes, I'm seeing a lot of exciting things happening in terms of creativity and Christian music. So movies, I'm still waiting for that like renaissance of like the next generation of like Christian filmmakers who are like Terrence Malick, perhaps, who are making films that are, you know, beautiful. And that's the thing. Like, I think we have a pretty anemic theology of beauty in evangelical Christianity. So that's why we think that everything we make in terms of a creative work has to be a sermon. It has to just function like a PowerPoint presentation where it's just about communicating the truth of the gospel or whatever in an efficient way through whatever medium it happens to be, whether it's music or film or TV. But what's missing in that is recognizing that beauty matters, and sometimes beauty involves more than just efficient communication of ideas, you know. And I often remind people of like the Bible itself makes room for beauty, right? Mm-hmm. Like God could have revealed himself through the Bible, and it could have just been like, first of all, it could have been like an eighth of the length, because it could have just been like a list of bullet points, right? The whole Bible could have just been 1,000 bullet points for like living life in the world, but it isn't. It communicates that wisdom, but it does so through story and through drama and through poetry at times. And so God himself clearly cares about beauty. You know, look at the world he created. Look at the extravagant diversity of birds and plant life. Like, you have to look at that and be like, God, he doesn't just care about the efficiency of life. He cares about the abundant beauty of it. And so that should provide, I think, the foundation of our creativity as Christians. You know, we are made in God's image. And if he is this concern, you know, if he cares this much about beauty and making beautiful things, that's why we should too.
Yeah, you know, all the good movies are basically copies of themes that we find in the Bible, right? It's like the betrayal or sacrifice. Yeah. Those are all biblical themes, and like you know, like you're mentioning, Brett, like the Bible is filled with stories, and it's a beautiful story. You know, I mean, there's incest, there's murder, there's, I mean, there's all these things in there, but I feel like for some reason the Christian movie makers are trying to create not a movie for art's sake, but they're trying to create an evangelistic tool.
Yeah.
You know, they want people to watch it and like be blown away and like convert to Christianity from it. And I don't know if that's necessarily the place for art.
Yeah, I agree. That's what preaching is for. That's what the pulpit is for. You know, a movie can communicate truth in powerful ways, but it does so in a different way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Great. If anyone reads, there's a great book by Mike Cosper, I think, called The Stories We Tell.
Stories We Tell, yeah.
Yeah. That kind of what Jay says is true, that every story that you've been captivated by, The Wire, Game of Thrones, I don't know, whatever it may be, it's ultimately derived from the gospel narrative, which I have found so helpful to be more intentional. Like Brett mentioned, that I look for those fragments in whatever I'm watching.
And I think that, just quickly, Eugene, like, I think that is a great jumping off point for engaging culture. So if we really want to be good Christians in terms of engaging a secular culture, like, just look to art, just look to the narratives. What are the stories being told? Because I guarantee there's going to be a way that you can kind of make connections with God's story and the themes in the Bible. Movies are, you know, any sort of art is really like a prayer. It's a secular prayer. It's someone expressing that search for meaning, that search for like purpose through the channels of art. There's a great book by Josh Larson called Movies Are Prayers that I would also recommend, similar to Mike Cosper's book. But it's true, you know, and that's what I love about writing movie reviews for the Gospel Coalition, is you can find these longings so easily in pop culture. But we need to be smart as Christians to be able to locate that and to be able to start that conversation and not just react defensively and, like, you know, look at that movie and be like, well, it had 10 F words and 2 sex scenes, so Christians need to just, you know, boycott it or whatever. Like, no, like, what is beneath the filmmaker's intention? Like, what are they trying to say? What are they expressing that we need to be aware of and engaging as Christians?
Yeah. You know, I think you mentioned this to you before, Brett, that in community is a good way to process not only what's maybe appropriate to watch, but what's helpful and you know, encouraging. And I guess for you, if people didn't know, Brett is he's not a armchair movie critic. He is a actual professional trained movie critic, and that also is a very knowledgeable Christian. Are there any pieces, music, movies, documentaries, TV shows that maybe you would recommend? I think a lot of people right now, they're stuck at home. You know, they're watching their favorite show, The Friends, maybe. Actually, their Friends are gone. But sometimes
The Office.
The Office, maybe, just to numb their minds. But are there any good pieces, art, music, movies, TV shows that you would recommend, maybe for the church, to be intentional with, to wrestle with, and to even, you know, look for moments and fragments of the gospel?
I'm always, like, paralyzed in this moment when people ask this question, because there's so much that I'm always watching and listening to. In terms of music, I've really been into Fleet Foxes' new album. I think Justin Bieber is doing some interesting things in terms of what's going on with him spiritually.
Shout out to Chance the Rapper.
Yeah, right. That was an awesome performance on SNL with Chance. and that song, right? The Holy song is just, it's begging for Christians to understand what is going on there. In terms of movies, let's see. Tenet, of course, is a thoughtful, interesting movie. If you haven't seen that, put on your thinking cap before you watch it, because it's quite the mind bender. But
yeah, I feel like that'll scramble my brain like crazy.
Yeah, it's definitely not like a kick up your feet and turn on Netflix sort of movie. You gotta invest in it. But it's like most things, the more, if you invest in it, it's rewarding, I think, because there's a lot of ideas in there. Christopher Nolan is he's a really thoughtful guy with a lot of spiritual questions on his mind, even. The Crown as a TV show, I consistently find that to be a really beautifully made show that wrestles with deep, often quite interesting spiritual questions and theological questions. There was an episode from last season that I wrote about for the Gospel Coalition called Moon Dust, I think the episode was called, and it was all about the Apollo landing on the moon back in 1969 and how the royal family processed that. and it's about Prince Philip in particular. Anyway, if you haven't watched that, you can watch it as a one-off thing, because it's not, each of the episodes of The Crown is a it's kind of standalone. But yeah, I don't know, what about you? I maybe your recommendations will trigger recommendations? Some,
you know, I was really into the reality show Alone. It's a survival show where these survival experts are trying to basically survive out in the wilderness for as long as possible, and totally. the last one remaining wins $500,000. But it's one of those things where you see these people who are capable enough to survive out in the wilderness, and yet a lot of them tap out purely from a lack of community, a lack of lonely. I mean, they have food, right. they just kind of give up, you know.
Right.
And so I thought that was very interesting, especially during our shelter in place, and just as people are reminded, you know, even if you're non-Christian, just how important community is, you know.
I feel like we're all living that reality show this year.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, right. Music, I'm not a big music guy. I just listen to Oceans over and over again. So that's me.
Just continuous loop.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If there is one song that's not Christian, kind of, that I would really recommend, there's a band called Laney. I don't know how to pronounce it.
Oh, yeah. Laney.
Mm-hmm. Laney. Yeah. Thanks. Mm-hmm. They're a little like pop rock that got big. But I think they all grew up in the church, and they came out with a song called I Still Talk to Jesus, which has not been gotten out of my head because I think it's the most honest depiction I've not just non-Christian but Christian depiction that I've felt of someone in search of Jesus when they are far away but they know that they need something like that spiritual in their life. I found that to be really crazy, that this is like one of the most powerful witnesses probably right now that's not even coming from a Christian mouthpiece.
Interesting. So
if you have time,
I love stuff like that.
I would love,
I'll have to check that out.
Great, and it's a chill song too to listen to, so it's nothing crazy. But but yeah, with the recommendations, hey, thanks, Brett, for coming out so much. Maybe you can give just some closing details on the books, when to look out for it, where to get it, to close us off.
Yeah, thanks for having me. The book comes out February 9th, so still a couple months away, but you can pre-order it if you want on Amazon. That's a good way to help authors, because it shows publishers that there's interest before it comes out, so they're gonna stock more copies based on that. So we always try to push pre-orders, so if you think you're gonna read The Wisdom Pyramid, go ahead and pre-order it on Amazon. And other than that, I'm gonna be speaking a lot, and happy to do like Zoom appearances if you want, or it's a great small group book, so I'm really gonna encourage churches and small groups to read it through in the new year. And I have discussion questions with each chapter at the end of each chapter. Yeah.
Hey, for the first 10 people that DM me after this podcast, I will buy them this book. So
I got DM Jade 10 times.
Except for Eugene.
I'm just kidding. Again, we really highly recommend anything Brett writes, as you know, both pastors at True North, and especially this book. We really recommend it to our church. We hope you can read it. I know me and Jay will, and the first 10 who DM will get it for free. So thanks a lot, Brett. We had a lot of fun. Hope to see you soon, maybe.
Yeah, thanks, guys.